Welcome to your midday NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. At the end of the three-day G7 summit in France yesterday, the world leaders released a joint statement dealing with Hong Kong, Iran, and trade.
On trade, they called for the overhaul of the World Trade Organization. Specifically, they want to increase intellectual property protection, settle disputes more quickly, and to eliminate unfair trade practices. It echoes President Donald Trump's calls to reform the organization, which he accuses China of abusing. The world leaders said they stood behind the Sino-British Joint Declaration of 1984. The declaration grants the city of Hong Kong a certain amount of autonomy from the rest of China. The leaders also called for violence to be avoided in street protests over a controversial extradition bill that has rocked the city in recent months. On Iran, the leaders were united in their opposition to the country becoming a nuclear nation. The G7 consists of France, Germany, the US, Japan, Canada, Australia, and the UK.
In the U.S., a judge ruling that drug maker Johnson & Johnson must pay $572 million for its part in fueling Oklahoma's opioid addiction crisis. The state's attorney general had filed a lawsuit seeking $17 billion to address the impact of the drug crisis on Oklahoma. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, opioids were involved in almost 400,000 overdose deaths from 1999 to 2017. The state's lawyers said that since 2000, some 6,000 Oklahomans have died from opioid overdoses. Johnson & Johnson said it would appeal the decision. And Republican Congressman Sean Duffy, who represents Northern Wisconsin in the House, will be resigning next month.
Duffy posted on his Facebook page Monday that he is resigning on September 23rd to spend more time with his family. Duffy said he recently learned that his ninth child, who is due in October, has a heart condition and will need even more love, time, and attention due to complications. The 47-year-old was first elected to Congress in 2010. He has been a staunch supporter of President Donald Trump.
We need to unify behind a new president who can strengthen, protect, and restore our nation for the next generation.
And has also been widely mentioned as a possible candidate for governor in 2022 or the U.S. Senate. The former cast member of MTV's The Real World, Boston, says he needs a break from public service in order to support his family. Democratic Governor Tony Evers will have to call a special election to fill the vacancy.
Now to Brazil, where President Jair Bolsonaro said today he will consider accepting the offer of $20 million from the G7 nations to fight forest fires in the Amazon rainforest. But only if French President Emmanuel Macron takes back what Bolsonaro is calling insults against him. This just an hour after his communications office said Brazil would reject the funding. In recent days, the two leaders became embroiled in a deeply personal and public war of words. Initially, as the fires gained global headlines, Bolsonaro said Brazil did not have the resources to tackle the blazes. Then, in the wake of the G7 offer, his environment minister Ricardo Salles called the aid welcome. Macron made the offer of financial aid at the G7 summit on Monday after leaders discussed the fires ravaging the world's largest tropical rainforest, often dubbed the lungs of the world. And in California, some people are trying to break away from the current state to form a new one. NTD's Eiling Ang hears what an anti-communism and public speaker thinks of the proposal.
It's enlightening, and it is deep.
At a new California event this weekend, communism expert and public speaker Trevor Loudon was invited as a keynote speaker to share his thoughts about the movement. He said the idea of breaking away from the current California to form a new state is a good idea.
All the power is concentrated in the big cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So the people in the hinterland, the farmers, the people who actually do things for a living, are not represented, and you're getting a complete distortion and a complete dominance by the cities, who are all dominated by the left, and this is destroying California.
New California is a movement that aims to create a new state where personal liberty is put above government. It is composed of the rural counties of California. The red areas represent New California counties. The yellow areas are counties that would remain in California. However, the borders are not finalized yet. Their first legislature meeting was in July 2018. Since then, they have held several meetings to set up an assembly and a senate, representing each of the counties of New California. According to Loudon, California has communist influence.
Chinese government's got a huge influence in San Francisco and in Sacramento. They probably have more control over California than the federal government does.
In addition, leftist politics worsen the situation.
And they are just ramming their agenda down the throats of decent people in California, and they're bringing the country. If they had their way, they would make this country like Venezuela, this state like Venezuela. That is the trajectory they are on.
He is impressed that the people in charge of the New California movement understand that America was built on a spiritual foundation.
America is the only country in the world where your rights come from God, not the government.
Those in the movement plan to continue to hold meetings and pass resolutions for the new state. Eileen Ng, NTD News, San Luis Obispo, California.
Now to Hong Kong. The protests weren't always this violent. On Sunday, thousands of protesters marched in the pouring rain without incident. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg was there to see it all.
Three metro stations were closed in anticipation of a planned march in the Sun Wan district. At 3 p.m. local time, the march began. People flooded the streets despite the nearest operating station being about a mile away from the march site.
The only thing that we can do is to march, is to protest, is to rally, legally or illegally. But this is the only way that we can speak out.
I think it's time to stand out and then tell the societies and our peoples that we should do something right instead of just keep silence or just let it go.
Fight for freedom!
Protests initially started over a since-suspended extradition bill have expanded to include an independent inquiry into police use of force and universal suffrage.
Instead of one country, two system, this bill will make it to the one country, one system.
Personally, I don't trust the legal system in Hong Kong and also the legal system in China. And I know that actually if the extradition bill will pass, many of the Hong Kongers will be sent to China for other political reasons, which will harm ourselves and put our Hong Kongers and also many foreigners in danger.
Both organizers and police did not provide an estimate for how many participated in the protest.
We are waiting for any international help, like maybe maybe for President Trump, maybe from our British government.
We will stay strong, right the wrong, and save Hong Kong. Thank you.
Rain hasn't stopped these people from marching in the streets to have their voices heard. There's people of all ages out here chanting, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." And protesters say they won't stop until the government responds to their five demands. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
As the UK prepares to exit the EU, its trading relationship with China is becoming more pertinent. But trading with China doesn't mean kowtowing to them. Jane Werrell in London reports.
The term golden era is a mantra often repeated by both the UK and China to describe their relationship. But Charles Parton, who was specialist advisor on China to the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee, says that perhaps it's more about finding a golden mean rather than a so-called golden era.
There has to be a balance between, on the one hand, our national security, our interests and our values, and doing business with China.
Contrary to the line of the Chinese ambassador to the UK, not kowtowing to China has historically resulted in trade going up.
When the UK was in the doghouse over David Cameron meeting the Dalai Lama back in 2010, in the two subsequent years, yes, we had no ministerial visits, but our trade went up. I always say to people, look at the facts. China needs foreign trading partners as much as we need China.
And bringing in too much money from China may not necessarily benefit the UK.
The spreading of Huawei communication network is beginning to undermine the national security a little bit. And admitting too much Chinese hot money would just make property prices in central London go up and up. It would hardly benefit the common well-being of the British people.
But a former ambassador says that the British government does continue to bring up the Communist Party's poor human rights record with China in private, if not in public.
The British media were constantly saying, you must speak to the Chinese government about their behaviour on human rights. And British ministers did that, but they did it in a way that was not in public, and I'm sure that continues to be the case.
Recent protests in London highlighting the political turmoil in Hong Kong have put the spotlight on British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Will Boris surrender to China? One of the banners boldly reads. The answer remains to be seen. Jane Worrell, NTD News.
In Canada, a man suspected of vandalizing newspaper boxes belonging to the Epoch Times over a period of several months was arrested by Toronto police yesterday. The Epoch Times is a sister media to NTD and publishes its newspaper daily. Fabio Guerrieri, 50, was observed stealing newspapers from an Epoch Times box. Police said he was arrested before he could vandalize the box. For months, over 70 newspaper boxes in Toronto have been the target of vandalism. This includes the papers in the boxes being stolen, the boxes themselves being damaged, and foul-smelling garbage being put inside the boxes. Guerrieri has been charged with mischief over $5,000. His next court appearance is on September 19th. A Chinese-born Australian writer held in China since January has been formally arrested on suspicion of espionage, according to an announcement made by the Australian and Chinese governments today. The news comes amid growing diplomatic tensions between Canberra and Beijing.
Former Chinese diplomat turned online journalist and blogger Yang Hengjun was detained in the southern city of Guangzhou while awaiting a transfer to Shanghai. After flying in from New York, he was later moved to the capital, Beijing. Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said in a statement that Dr. Yang has been held in Beijing in harsh conditions, without charge, for more than 7 months. Espionage is punishable by death in China, but Yang intends to deny the charge.
Well, we're always concerned when Australian citizens are arrested overseas. I understand the conditions that are being applied are not those that we would necessarily come to expect on arrest in Australia. Every consulate assistance will be offered the individual.
Yang's Australian lawyer, Robert Starry, explained the basis of the charge is still unknown.
We know he's a political activist in the sense that he's a democracy activist and he's a blogger and academic. But we don't understand that there's anything else alleged against him at this point.
Payne said China has not allowed Yang access to his lawyers or family since his detention. However, Australian embassy officials have visited Yang 7 times since January and were scheduled to meet him again on Tuesday. Yang's wife, who is an Australian permanent resident, has also been barred from leaving China. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Geng Shuan claims the case is still being processed. The arrest of the 53-year-old comes as Beijing struggles to contain anti-government protests in Hong Kong, the semi-autonomous Chinese city.
And when the Chinese Communist Party launched what it says is a campaign against ethnic separatism and a religious extremism in Xinjiang, an estimated 1 million Uyghurs have since been detained or arrested across the region. One young man, a Uyghur living in the U.S., calls for help to rescue his father, who is detained.
Kamal Turk Yelkin and his family are living in exile in the United States. 3 years ago, his father, a noted Uyghur scholar, Yelkin Rosie, was sentenced to 15 years in a Chinese prison.
My father was just being a normal Uyghur intellectual, trying to preserve our culture.
Rosie, 54, was among the first victims of a new campaign against Uyghur culture. He was an editor of state-sponsored textbooks that taught Uyghur stories and poetries to millions of students. He worked with government censors, and the books were always published. But when a hardline leader took over China's Xinjiang region in 2016, the government abolished Rosie's textbooks and mandated only Mandarin be spoken in schools.
Just since the appointment of this new party secretary, they really turned to full-scale oppression and full-scale eliminating of any kind of ideas that they don't like.
Hundreds of prominent Uyghurs have been imprisoned in the last few years, including academics, writers, performers, and artists. They are believed to be among an estimated 1 million or more held in internment camps and prisons across the region.
We didn't see this coming. And that has left us wondering
What's planned next?
Experts say Beijing's targeting of Uyghurs and their Muslim culture is alarming.
It's extraordinary that China is effectively getting away with arbitrarily detaining a million Turkic Muslims and not really paying a price for it.
One of Kamal Turk's biggest regrets is that he didn't take all of his father's textbooks with him when he left China, which he never imagined would be destroyed.
I'm trying to let the world know that my father is not some people that is trying to subvert government. He's just a normal Uyghur people.
Kamal Turk is now living in Philadelphia, working on translating his father's books to keep his father and culture from being forgotten.
In Vietnam, Malaysia's prime minister receiving a welcome ceremony hosted by his Vietnamese counterpart today and holding bilateral talks focusing on mutual interests and security.
Malaysia and Vietnam later signed an agreement to work toward a memorandum of understanding on cooperation on law enforcing and search and rescue on the sea. The agreement was signed by Vietnam's Deputy Defense Minister and Malaysia's Minister of Foreign Affairs and witnessed by Vietnam's Prime Minister Nguyen Chuan Phuc and Malaysia's Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad. The meeting between Malaysia and Vietnam took place amid China's increasing aggression in the South China Sea and the Indian Ocean.
The world is experiencing a disregard for international laws, and many countries are affected because the big powers take the law into their own hands and they do things which are contrary to their stand on international management of international relations.
In a statement released Monday, the Pentagon also expressed concerns. Vietnam and Malaysia have long been embroiled in maritime disputes with China in the South China Sea. The Philippines, Brunei, and Taiwan also have claims to parts of the potentially energy-rich maritime territory, which also functions as a busy shipping lane. Miguel Moreno, NTD News.
Martial artists from all over the world came together in New Jersey on Sunday for the finals of the 2019 International Traditional Martial Arts Competition. NTD reporter Shuwen Rong spoke with some of the contestants and audience to learn more about what makes this so special.
On August 25th, the 6th International Traditional Chinese Martial Arts Competition finals successfully ended with three gold winners.
I'm really happy, but mostly I am thankful and grateful for this, because NTD truly put their heart into preserving traditional Chinese martial arts and presenting it to the public. NTD's competition gives us an opportunity to speak with international martial artists. I think it's amazing.
Whether you win or lose is not the most important thing here, but whether you learn something from the experience. The competition has seven divisions. There were 67 semifinalists, 39 of whom made it to the finals.
Just kind of honored that they would allow me to make it so far, and just I hope I can do my best.
For the audience, it wasn't only entertaining and educational, but also eye-opening to see this on such a grand scale.
It's almost unusual to see it. And to see it on a global stage almost, it's, you know, I couldn't imagine seeing it here.
I come from Ecuador to see this competition.
Martial arts is so beautiful. I feel really happy and so excited by this.
Really wonderful. I saw them practicing and I was pretty amazed.
The contestants came from Asia, Europe and North America with many different styles. Head judge of the martial arts competition, Yofu Lee, said the contestants shouldn't only acquire martial arts skills, but it must be in a traditional form.
Postures, movements, hands and eyes, even the spirit, each style has its own characteristics. But it needs to maintain its traditional form.
Judge Lee hopes that through this competition, people will understand and learn more about traditional martial arts and its values. Reporting by NTD News, Shuwen Rong.
automakers around the world are pushing hard for new networks that can charge electric cars fast. And a 15-month study of electric car charging behavior in Germany has reached some conclusions.
The study found that consumers can be persuaded to accept slow overnight recharging that could help avoid brownouts from surges in electricity demand or costly upgrades to power grids. Millions of electric vehicles, or EVs, are likely to be hitting the roads as governments gradually ban new diesel and gasoline cars, especially in Germany, which is switching from nuclear and coal to less predictable sources of energy, such as wind and solar. The study shows that too many EVs charging at peak times could cause network crashes. They found that all the households in the study came around to leaving their electric cars plugged in overnight, and only half ever charged simultaneously. With limited EV battery ranges for now, slow overnight charging doesn't get around the problem of how to persuade drivers to ditch petrol cars altogether. Someone who works in Munich and has to travel for business can't afford to drive from Munich to Stuttgart, about 142 miles, and stop to recharge twice, having to wait for 2 or even 2.5 hours. I believe that's the main problem. The loading capacities will definitely be expanded over the coming months and next 2 years, but that, I think, needs to work. Without a network of fast charging stations offering quick refueling, drivers may be wary of using EVs for long trips, which is why some automakers want lots of fast charging stations to encourage the widespread adoption of electric cars. Reporting by Emily Ho, NTD News.
Experts speaking with NTD analyze which country or region in Asia is most likely to host missiles for the U.S. After Defense Secretary Mark Esper said he wants to deploy land-based intermediate-range missiles there as soon as possible.
The U.S. officially withdrew from its arms control treaty with Russia, the Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or INF, on August 2nd. The U.S. soon expressed that it would deploy land-based intermediate-range missiles in Asia as soon as possible. It is generally believed that the most likely place to deploy the new missile is one of the U.S.'s military bases in Guam. As for U.S. allies, CSIS expert Bonnie Glazer says the most likely host is Japan.
Increasing the commitment of the United States is welcome for Japan. But at the same time, Japan has a principle, non-nuclear weapon principle. So Japan need to change this principle if U.S. deploy nuclear force in Japan.
It is not easy to persuade most Japanese to abandon this non-nuclear principle. However, some experts believe that the military threat China poses is forcing Japan to rethink this policy. Another issue is whether U.S. missiles will be deployed directly to Taiwan. Experts say it's not likely because it seems too provocative to China. Taiwan is more likely to establish its own missile system and cooperate with allies to create a new system of deterrence.
Yes, so I think in the specific case of Taiwan, the U.S. could work with its other allies in the region to be able to deploy systems like these missiles, but other air, sea, and ground systems, to be able to, even from bases in the Marianas or Japan, Korea, the Philippines, be able to bring forces and help the Taiwanese if the Taiwanese come under a communist Chinese invasion.
Some experts say that the deployment of U.S. missiles to the Asia-Pacific region will be a long-term process, and the discussion has just begun. At the same time, this is also an effective way to pressure China, forcing it to consider joining a new missile constraint framework.
I think the secretary was right to at least raise the issue, put it on the agenda. It's not a bad thing for Beijing to know we have options that they may not like, and therefore the option right now is maybe to join us in dialogue, in negotiation, rather than to let us go down this path.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Singapore is testing autonomous shuttle buses, no drivers required, in a tourist area.
Monday was the first day of the trial, and there were many bus stewards and passengers making sure seatbelts were tightly fastened as the driver tested the self-rotating steering wheel at all times, ready to snatch back control.
I have to look out for traffic, any hazards, which some drivers, they violate the rules, which we need to take extra precautions because they doesn't know how these autonomous bus are working on. And most importantly, I have to ensure my passengers are on safety.
Testing does come with risk, though. Still in its development stages, the use of the technology has been associated with some fatalities. In Singapore, a self-driving car undergoing testing in 2016 collided with a truck as it was changing lanes, but there were no injuries. Singapore's tests are being closely watched as tech firms and automakers race to build self-driving cars and develop new business plans for what is expected to be a long-term makeover of personal transport. Emily Ho, NTD News.
And that's all for today's NTD Midday News. Join us again this evening. I'm Tiffany Meyer.